From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Deccan. Most importantly, you are here, you are you, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. I think I may have inverted the typical greeting, but
I liked it.
But you get the gist.
Yeah, right?
Get the gist. Matt, today we have a very special collaboration.
Yes, we're getting together with another podcast that's on our network called Culture Kings. It's hosted by two guys,
Edgar Monplaisir and Jackie Sneal. These guys are not just comedians, actors, writers, performers. They're also two of the smartest, coolest dudes that we know. And so for a long time, behind the scenes, we had been putting together some way for us to collaborate. And we landed on a topic that really interested all four of us pretty much immediately.
Well, and it's something that perhaps you and I and Noel alone might not have all of the information, or we don't have the understanding of kind of the bigger topic. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly my fault. I apologize. I'm going to go put myself out there. It's because I know so very little about sports and sports icons and anything around a lot of this stuff. When we talked to Brian Toohey a long time ago, that was a big struggle for me. I just didn't grasp a lot of the stuff. But these guys have a handle on it, and they're really going to help us understand this topic better.
So we got on the phone with Edgar and Jackie and said, hey guys, what do you think about the conspiracy theories surrounding Michael Jordan's 1993 retirement from basketball?
That was it. Just one little seed, and this is what happened.
And welcome to the show, Jackie's Edgar. Thank you so much for coming on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Oh, man. Thank you guys for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. I feel like this is the perfect podcast for Jackie's and I to be on.
We are black conspiracy theorists.
One of the five.
One of the five out there. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Your listeners are in for a doozy.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 9/11 real quick. No, I'm joking.
We'll get there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we do. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the first of many conversations. So for a little bit of background, for anyone who doesn't know yet, for some reason or another, Culture Kings, your podcast, and our podcast, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, are part of the larger podcast network or family at How Stuff Works. And for a peek behind the scenes, we had been on the phone earlier kicking around ideas about what, you know, what exactly is a conspiracy theory? What are some conspiracies that people may not have heard? And because Culture Kings has such a wide spectrum of ideas and concepts that you guys explore, we couldn't think of any guest that we would rather have on the show.
Yeah, for this specific topic, especially because this is something that a lot of people maybe don't know anything about, because the central figure has such a great, pristine almost reputation in certain areas, in certain aspects of his life. Mr. Michael Jordan.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Yes, the man, the legend.
So, like, when you think about Michael Jordan, what images pop in your head? What memories happen?
I mean, well, I'll just rip this Band-Aid off real quick. I'm from Chicago, so...
That's not the Band-Aid you need to rip off.
What's the Band-Aid I need to rip off?
That you are by far the biggest Michael Jordan stan I know in my personal life.
I don't think that's true at all. See, this is essentially what Culture Kings is, especially when we talk basketball. You guys are just going to listen to us argue for the next hour.
Accepted.
So I'll rip that off right away. So I grew up watching Jordan. So for me, especially, like, my biggest memory was I was at Jordan's last game in Chicago that he played as a Bull. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously the titles and everything like that, but just for me, the feeling of we are unstoppable as a team is what I remember the most when Michael Jordan was playing.
For me, it was the 92 Olympics. I was like 9 at that time, I think. And that's the biggest image I have of Michael Jordan, because I've lived in Georgia, Atlanta my whole life. And he was always kind of like a rival of the Hawks. I was actually a Hawks fan. And in my mind, though, something about the 92 Olympics when all of the teams got together and just crushed everyone so hard, it was awesome.
It was, I mean, we used to torch y'all too.
Yeah, I know.
So I think, and this can be wrong, but it's pretty close to the top. Jordan has the most game winners against the Hawks than any other team in the NBA.
I mean, most people playing, do, obviously. Dude. That's not really bragging rights. Come on.
For me personally, I'm a lot younger in terms of like my basketball fanship. Like I started watching basketball in high school, so I missed all of the Jordan stuff, all of the 90s peak basketball stuff. So my memories of Jordan are completely from the movie Space Jam.
I'm so glad.
And the Wizards.
And the Wizards.
You know Michael Jordan as a wizard.
I know Michael Jordan Wizards so well. And so he's always been a myth, a legend in my mind, because I was just like, oh, man, this guy balled out with the Looney Tunes. So, like, that's where my, memory of Michael Jordan starts and ends, really.
I'm so glad you said that, because as a kid, Space Jam, I was holding off because I didn't want to play myself by mentioning that unless somebody else was on board. But when I was a kid and Space Jam came out, I thought, we've said this is an explicit episode. I thought it was the most legitimate goddamn movie that I had seen in my short life, because I was like, everybody's here. Bugs Bunny showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan.
The Martian guy.
Bill Murray.
Marvin the Martian.
Yeah.
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Man.
Bill Murray before he became an internet meme.
Yep.
Back when he was out there just doing the work. And I think for various different reasons, Michael Jordan on the court and off the court became, as we were saying earlier, this living legend made flesh, you know, this icon. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, I appreciate the earlier jive about standing for him, but in a lot of ways, the entire country did, you know? There was even people who saw Michael Jordan and the Bulls. I feel like it's almost like Michael Jordan and the Bulls. Even when they saw him beat the snot out of their personal favorite team, they were still, even if only begrudgingly, they were still like, he is the most amazing basketball player alive.
Yeah.
I mean, people talk about how, like, when the Warriors go play, more hometown fans cheer for the Warriors and their actual hometown teams. I think when Michael Jordan was playing, they were just cheering for Michael Jordan, which I think is way more of an incredible feat, being like, I don't care what fucking team he's on. He's here in this city and we're watching him play.
It's insane, because for me, I didn't have that. I'm standing for Michael Jordan as an opposing, like, fan. Yeah. I was standing for him as a fan of my team as well. So I didn't really understand the scope of how big Michael Jordan was until I was a teenager, well after he had retired, or, you know, by the time he was on the Wizards. I was like, oh, Michael Jordan is that dude.
Yeah. He's the standard of basketball.
Yeah, he's the standard of basketball. And I knew he was the greatest and everything like that, but the fact that, you know, like Pat Riley, for instance, retired his jersey in Miami, and the dude has not played a second of basketball for the Miami Heat is crazy. That's insane, dude. This dude he is just the myth in the basketball world, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
So as a legend and a myth of the NBA, a very powerful and wealthy organization, he was getting paid really, really well. And because he had like 6 seasons or so before even the first championship that he won. And
7.
Yeah. And he was 7. Yeah. And he was getting paid all along the way because he was already kind of a star player and becoming a star player. And then you start winning championships and you're getting paid more and more and more until you get up to 1993. And for some reason, he retires.
And at the time, there is an ongoing investigation, right? And he retires, what, 3 days before that investigation concludes?
You guys, tell us about this.
Well, so, if I may start, I want to paint a picture about Michael Jordan because I feel like we just gave you a god. And I wanted to let you guys know something very, very clearly. Michael Jordan is a fucking asshole.
He
is. And there's not a person in the world who will disagree with that statement. He is cocky, he is rude, and he's a bully. Michael Jordan is so much of an asshole.
I don't know if I would go that far.
He's a bully. He would literally pick a player every game and say, I'm going to fuck your life up.
Yes.
And would dunk on them. That is a bully.
That is a bully on a basketball court.
Michael Jordan at his Hall of Fame, at his Hall of Fame acceptance speech, do you know who he brought as his guest of honor?
Who?
The guy that they cut him for on his freshman basketball team. This nigga doesn't play basketball anymore. And he brought him as his guest of honor and called him out at the beginning of his Hall of Fame speech. So Michael Jordan is
That is what we call fire, baby.
But at least
he's a giant, giant asshole. And I think a lot of his cockiness extended into a behavior that Jaquise can go in a little bit more about.
I'm not sure where you want me to go with this.
I mean, he was a massive...
I mean,
gambler.
Yeah, listen, Michael Jordan, I'm not going to sit up here and act like he wasn't an asshole. I don't think he was an asshole to the point where this dude is out here punching babies and shit. Like,
That's such a high level of asshole.
I mean, man, how hard you just called him an asshole makes him sound like he out here kicking homeless people. Well. And be like, I dare you to hit a shot on me.
That was him.
I loved it.
At least he was a notoriously good tipper, though, right?
See, unlike no tipping Pippin. He was a good tipper. All right, so
no, I'm just playing. He was like terrible. Apparently, like Charles Barkley one time.
I had heard he was a bad tipper.
Sorry, I was totally joking.
I've heard he's a bad tipper. I don't know any tips. Scottie Pippen got the nickname "No Tipping Pippen." So that is who I know is the bad tipper.
I believe it.
Of the duo, but Pippen wasn't making as much money as Jordan, so
isn't
I get it.
Michael Jordan also hasn't he been notoriously rude to children? Not. I'm not saying he hit him.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. So here's the thing. I went to school with Michael Jordan's niece. And he came to our school one time, and he was nice as hell to us.
Awesome.
What a pick-me attitude.
He was like, nice to
he
me.
He was nice to me.
So,
He's a jerk.
Okay. Let's get to his gambling, though.
Yeah,
the dude had a gambling problem, man. I want this to be clear, too, because we're not just talking like he was a gambler and this is an isolated time for gamblers in sports. This is pretty close to the Pete Rose being banned from Major League Baseball for gambling.
I mean, we're talking about Tim Donahue as well, a referee gambling, and like everyone was gambling at this time.
So how big of a gambler he was a problem.
Yeah.
It was a problem. It was a problem because you didn't know what he was gambling on. You could see, I mean, everything that Edgar said and everything we're saying, you can see this man saying, I'll gamble on myself because I know I'll beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the type of player that he was, where he took those risks on the court, and I gambled on myself. So this was a problem, and all of a sudden, he retires? Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm thinking that somebody knew, and if it would have came out, it would have ruined basketball.
So when we're talking about basketball, the head commissioner of the NBA at the time was David Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that we know about David Stern, he inherited the NBA as kind of like a shithole in terms of no one was watching games. Players were not only unhealthy, but they're like doing drugs and fighting and having sex with a ton of women. So his entire journey was to convert the NBA into a money-making machine.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Jordan, along with Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, were very much so a part of
that. Michael Jordan was the face of that.
Of course, and it really helped him turn around. I mean, if you follow the NBA's numbers from when David Stern took over to where he left it, it's phenomenal, the job that he did. So David Stern has always been kind of accused of making sure that the NBA is rigged in certain ways to favor fan favorite players and make sure that the NBA is marketable so that people keep watching it. And I think, and I assume that Chiquise, you agree with me as well on this, that David Stern knew that a Michael Jordan gambling scandal would ruin this NBA money-making machine that he had created.
Well, here's the thing. I brought up Pete Rose before, and I'm looking up right now when he was banned, and I think it was 1991. And if that is correct, the NBA would have been forced to do the same. Yeah, it was 1991. The NBA would have been forced to do the same thing with Michael Jordan. There's no way that they couldn't. I mean, you're talking 2 years after America's Pastime banned their number one hitter of all time. Mm-hmm. And Michael Jordan is a gambler who gets caught gambling. I mean, dude, it would have destroyed the NBA.
Yeah.
Destroyed the NBA. So, what do? You say, go away and let us clean this up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reason that this may. We'll get to, you know, the whole thing. I'm sure you guys will direct the conversation to that way. But there's no reason that this man who's making all this money, who's at the peak of his powers as a basketball player, just won 3 straight championships, walks away.
And you're done with basketball? Yeah.
Especially Come when on. He's that competitive too.
Yeah.
You know? That's one thing that I think catches everybody about the timeline here. And the context that you're painting is brilliant with David Stern, because after the NBA concluded that investigation into his gambling, right? They said they found, quote, no violation of league rules, which something is rotten in Denmark there. And I had heard, this is unconfirmed, but I had heard Michael Jordan himself made a comment in public about this, where he said, you know, people were like, why did you retire? Mm-hmm. Like you said, Jake, he's at the peak of his game. And Jordan said, if the urge comes back, if the Bulls will have me, if David Stern lets me, I may come back. And it's weird. It's so weird that he specifically cites, you know, not Jerry Krause, not Phil Jackson, David Stearns.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, David Stern ain't got nothing to do with if you want to come back. Of course he'll have you back.
Well, David Stern, I think we don't really understand the full extent into what David Stern was in terms of in control of basketball. Mm-hmm. Later on, there's like this CBA agreement, disagreement between the players and the NBA organization. This is like, I don't know, maybe like 2010, 2011, whenever the last walkout was.
Lockout 2011 season.
Yeah. So David Stern and the players' union are fighting. And like, I think the players' union are just like, we don't want to come back if David Stern is in charge. And this is what David Stern tells them. He says, if you get rid of me, I know where the bodies are buried.
Whoa.
And that was the end of that argument. Like,
wow.
Then the players agreed with whatever David Stern wanted and like kind of got what they wanted, but like not that much. And I think that this David Stern cat is into some real deep shit and knows a lot about the NBA and
he
how
knows
it works
the dirt
in the background.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he had to.
He was there for so long.
Yeah, and the 90s was just, I mean, the personalities of the 90s era of basketball were so big. I mean, we're talking the Dennis Rodmans, the Michael Jordans, the Charles Barkleys. Shaq is coming up at this time. Allen Iverson is coming up at this time. Like, you have all these basketball players that really pushed the NBA from just a sport to this is an entertainment conglomerate where our players have their hands in so many things that. But I know, you know, we're in America and football is, you know, king in America. Baseball is America's pastime. But the NBA is a global sport. And it's a global organization. And that really took off, starting with Michael Jordan, blew up through the 90s, and completely went out of that stratosphere in the 2000s.
I mean, David Stern's dream was for the NBA to be the biggest sport in the world. And Adam Silver is definitely continuing that dream now, where they want to rival soccer. Mm-hmm. They want basketball to be as big as soccer in the world, where it's the world sport.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I don't doubt for one second that David Stern had his hand in anything that could have either ended that dream or mm-hmm. made sure that anything that would have ended that dream was squashed immediately. Yeah.
So there's the question then, though, from the other side, which is a mm-hmm. question that is pretty common in any kind of conspiratorial theory discussion. And it's the question of how many people could keep a secret, right? There'll be people like, Sam Smith, for instance, saying, if this were true, something more definitive would have come out. Everyone I've talked to outside of the studio, just striking up the question at a bar or something, everybody seems to think it's pretty certain that mm-hmm. there was this conspiracy that occurred. But how would we – what I'm saying is, it's like an open secret is the way it's treated. So how would we respond to people who pose that argument, who say that something would have come out? Why hasn't anything come out yet?
Well, I think it has come out. It's just something – it's just attached to something that people don't really feel comfortable digging up. And I think it's kind of what we've been dancing around this entire time, which is the death of Michael Jordan's father.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I definitely want to get into that, but I will respond to that question with look at the current times we're in right now. How long did it take for the Bill Cosby shit to come out?
Like
40 plus years.
Yeah.
This notion that, well, it would have come out. You know how much stuff isn't out? Yeah. Or it takes decades to come out?
I mean, we still don't know all the details about, you know, most of the assassinations in the 60s.
Yeah.
So I doubt
true
we
story.
Know about this thing that
we
happened
we don't
in
even
the
know who killed Tupac and Biggie.
that's a good point. Yeah.
I think that argument holds very little weight that, well, something would have come out. Not really, man. A lot of shit happens every day that doesn't ever come out.
But I still think the facts are all there and the clues are all there. They're just, again, tied up in this very dark, murky story.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys are ready to get into it, we would love to get into it.
Let's dive in.
After a quick word from our sponsor. Okay, I'm gonna regret this, but lay it on us.
All right, so here's what makes this all sad, and here's what makes this even deeper, is, and for anybody who doesn't know what we're truly alluding to, let's just go ahead and say it as clear as day. We believe Michael Jordan did not retire from the sport of basketball because he fell out of love with the game. We believe Michael Jordan was forced to retire out of basketball because of his gambling issues, and they needed time to clean it up before Mike could come back to the game.
We also believe that Michael Jordan's gambling issues were tied up into a criminal syndicate known as the Mafia, which led to the murder of his father.
Yep. And that's what makes this sad.
James R. Jordan, Sr.
James R. Jordan, which is it's such a sad story. I mean, I was looking up on it today. Like, he was murdered on July 23rd. They didn't find his body until August 3rd. They couldn't even ID him until August 13th. I mean, you're talking the span of 2 weeks, or a little over 2 weeks at that time. That's not just your typical murder, man. Not for somebody as visible as the father of Michael Jordan, in the middle of her three-peat in basketball. Like, that's so crazy. And I think we think that it was tied to his gambling problem and the gambling debt or anything that had to do with gambling. And at least I think that. I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure, Edgar, you also are on that same train as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean... It's hard for me because, like, I think that Mafia as a genre of film is one of my favorite things in the world. So it's hard for me to look at a story like this and not have all these weird ideas and conspiracies start, you know, just busting out of my mind that I can't prove at all and can't make any sense of. But I still think there's so many fishy things about how that murder went down that to me screams mob hit.
So, yeah, in the official story, right, Daniel Andre Green and Larry Martin Demiri have said that they had planned to tie him up and to essentially rob him, right, and did not plan to murder him. But then, allegedly, Daniel Green pulls the trigger for, impulses, no reason or something. And the court has treated that as a foregone conclusion. Both those guys were sentenced and convicted. So what is fishy in the story, in at least their account? What makes it mafioso-esque?
Well, can I just put this in there really fast? Michael Jordan's father was killed on July 23rd, 1993. And Michael Jordan's official press conference that he gave in 1993, where he states that he's retiring, was October 6th, 1993. So there's not much time in between those two things. So that is one of the first things that people will point out to as maybe there's something here. But, you know, there's more about that. His father just died. Maybe that also plays into it. But you guys go ahead. I just want to add that.
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously nobody's going to say that he wasn't mourning his father's death. That's not what we're saying. And Mike Jordan said that the reason he was retiring is because the passion just wasn't there anymore because his father had passed away and he wanted to, you know, go play baseball, which was a dream his father had for him. And we'll get into that in a little bit too. But yeah, I think that if all that would have come out, Jordan gambling on the game, Jordan gambling problem leads to the death of his father. I mean, you are talking about a scandal that is the biggest scandal in sports history, probably, or at least in basketball's history. I mean, I can't think of another scandal that would have been bigger even to this day. So it is in the best interest of everybody to do whatever you got to do as a multi-billion-dollar corporation to squash that. To squash that as quick and as hard as you possibly can. Whether that is paying people off or stuff like that, you got to squash it. And Edgar, you were saying you thought this was a mafia hit. You brought up one point when we were talking earlier that, like, really, about the rings and stuff like that. That really leads the question to what was the cause of this? If you were just trying to murder this dude or rob from this dude, you left a pretty big thing to rob on his person.
Well, they didn't exactly leave it on his person, but they didn't do anything with it. So the story is that these two men were trying to rob Michael Jordan's father. Michael Jordan's father had apparently taken a nap on the highway. Like, he pulled over on the US Highway 74 and took a nap in his car, which already to me, I'm just like, what? Like, already there, I'm just like, that seems so not likely. But that, sure.
Yeah.
He took a nap in his car. And so these two guys spot the car and they try to rob it while he's asleep. And I guess something goes wrong and they kill him. Now, according to court documents, Green is the one who pulled the trigger, but Green never testified on this case ever. It was actually, I don't know how to say his name properly, but Demiri.
Yeah.
Demiri, who is the only person who ever testified, and he used his testimony against Green to, prosecute him and eventually convict him of this crime. Later on in the year 2010, the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation did a re-examination of the case and later realized that technicians mishandled and or omitted evidence from this case. And they believe that the conclusions that they came to can't be said 100%. After that, in 2018, The Center on Actual Innocence said that there is evidence that shows that Green did not commit the murder at all. So already Green's involvement is in question. The way that they caught them was apparently these two guys had Michael Jordan's father's cell phone and made several calls on it. And that's what pinpointed their location.
Yeah.
Also on them, they had two of Michael Jordan's championship rings.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, seems like these two guys are the dumbest people in the world. Mm-hmm. That they would not only use Michael Jordan's father's cell phone, but they would have, just on their person, chilling, two NBA championship rings. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen an NBA championship ring.
Yeah.
But it screams millions.
Diamonds, baby.
It is covered in diamonds. Yeah. It is 100% gold.
And it's a Michael Jordan championship ring.
If I was a robber and I just got that ring, and if I'm selling it.
I'm selling it immediately.
Yeah. There's no way I'm chilling with that ring in my pocket. It's not going to serve me. I'm going to find whatever dealer I know, and I'm going to try to get as much as I can for it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that these two guys kept that ring never, ever really made sense to me.
That's a good point, because going back through the actions they take post-murder, as far as we know about the timeline, it seems as if they are ticking all of the boxes to put them legally in an ironclad, foolproof case or situation where they're proving that they're there. They're proving that they did it. And it's almost as if they're going out of their way to do this because—
To get caught.
Yeah, because even back in the 90s, we all knew that— So, well, I assume we all knew, this is a conspiracy show, I assume everybody knew in the 90s how easily a cell phone could be tracked. Why would you carry it with you, let alone make a call?
So does it feel like a setup to you guys, like a frame or something like that, or what do you think?
I have two options.
Yeah.
So my first one is that it's a frame, right? Like, that's what we see clearly. But my second one is, if this is a mob hit, and this is, again, my mob brain spinning— These guys are crooks that knew they were going to take the fall for it the entire time.
They knew this was a job.
This was a job.
This was a job, and they knew they were taking the fall for it. And maybe it was, if we really getting deep into this, maybe it was, if you don't do it, you know, so we going to have problems, your families. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was like, all right. And you know, maybe they thought they would get away with it with the mob money and the lawyers and everything like that. I don't know.
Yeah. There are people like, you know, like who have either been to jail before or like, you know, have a record or are in that criminal world who are set up to take the blame for certain crimes or, you know, do certain crimes knowing that they're going to serve jail time for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are people who do that. And I think that maybe not Green, but DeMary, in how he was so comfortable to give Green up and how he was so comfortable to serve his sentence, 100% was just like, yeah, I'm taking the rap for this. And either Green knew as well, or it's an unfortunate circumstance where he was just riding with his boy, and now he's, like, in this situation for the rest of his life. I mean, they're serving life currently.
Right.
Yeah, they're never getting out.
Well, not for lack of trying, because I saw— In April of last year, April 2017, Daniel Green had gotten in the news again because he's seeking a new trial. And I think a lot of that is based on, as we mentioned earlier, the forensic questions when they went back and reinvestigated the evidence. And then he is maintaining his innocence, but he's claiming there was misconduct by the jury and law enforcement. So if we're going down the mob idea, the idea of a frame job, or the idea of either through threat or financial enticement, these two guys purposefully taking the fall, it's just another thing to add to the pile of mob tactics. The idea of jury tampering and bribing law enforcement officials, and you know, one thing that is abundantly clear in the U.S. nowadays is that it's not impossible to tamper with a jury in a way that is difficult to trace. And also, the price for corruption in law enforcement is cartoonishly low. I mean, a lot of cops are getting bought.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's true. So, I mean, and this is just a lot of stuff that doesn't add up to this story. And I know the simple devil's advocate response is the dude just retired from basketball. But man, I you know, where there's smoke, there's fire type thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of smoke to the other side of the argument, which is this man was forced to retire from basketball.
Of course. And in the same way that there's a simple response of they were just robbing him. And yeah. There's a clear robbery gone wrong. But no robbery really ever happened, at least from a standpoint of, like, taking the car or, like, you know, gutting it, and how these guys seem to know how to properly dispose of a body to the point where the body was so decomposed, they could only use his dental records.
Yeah, they can only use his dental records, which means, and this is sad to think of, and this is kind of veering off of the Michael Jordan retired, blah, 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 but you got away with it. Like, they didn't even find this body until a week later.
That sounds so professional to me.
Yeah, that's
not the thinking of two dumb robbers.
Right.
Like, that's so professional.
That's not the thinking of two robbers who are going to call on the man's cell phone several times the next week. Like, that
you're going to put the body somewhere where it's going to decompose so perfectly that you have to use dental records to identify the man.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and then we're going to get into a little more of the specifics about why possibly the mafia would have put a hit out on part of Michael Jordan's family.
And we're back. So when we left off, we were talking about the strange discrepancies between some aspects of these murderers' behavior and other aspects. I mean, that's like crime, true crime level professionalism, as we had mentioned, to dispose of a body that way, to get rid of the car, to break things down.
Someone whose job it is to take somebody out and hide it. That's what it feels like.
And then call them on the phone, as we had said, holding these just like cartoonishly opulent rings. If you happen to have never seen a championship ring, go ahead and Google that. But it takes us to another thing that, Matt, you had brought up before the break, which was the motivation for the mob, right?
Yeah,
Why would they do this?
We're talking about Michael Jordan and his gambling debts and a gambling problem and an addiction that he had. But just to put some numbers on that so you can really understand let's go into 1992, and this is right after winning the second championship that Michael Jordan played in and won. He was called to testify in a trial for a man named James Buehler, or B-O-U-L-E-R. I don't know how to say it right. And he had to explain why this dude, who's this, you know, he's a convicted drug dealer. Why does this guy have a personal check of yours, Michael Jordan, for $57,000? What is that doing there?
And Jim Buehler was like a hustler. Like, he was like a known golf hustler.
So he's – okay, so this is a guy that people already know. So Michael Jordan's obviously placing bets or something. Something's going on. And, you know, at first Jordan's like, oh, no, it's just a business loan. It's cool, guys. You don't have to worry about this. Then later, under oath, he has to admit that it's actually a giant payment for gambling losses that he incurred over a single weekend. $57,000 in a weekend.
Oh, that's deep in the hole.
But that kind of paints a picture of, well, how much money could he possibly be losing in the long term if in a weekend he's losing almost 60K, which for me, you know, is a salary, whatever.
That's crazy. Cool.
So there was a book that was published called Michael and Me, Our Gambling Addiction, My Cry for Help, from this guy named, what was his name?
Is that Richard Aquinas?
Yes. And he talks about how Jordan and him went on like this 10-day golfing like binge in San Diego, where apparently, and this is according to the book, like Jordan, of course, has denied this, but that Jordan ran up a bill of $1.2 million. Wow. In gambling debt.
And this is the type of debt that he would have. We're not talking like gamblers who, oh man, I lost $100K today. Now, this dude would be gambling millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions, guys. That and have debt of millions of dollars.
Well, and that's the thing. When you think about an NBA player like that, especially on the top of his game, you think about the millions of dollars in contracts and deals with Reebok or whatever.
Sponsorships, yeah.
But all that money is ultimately tied up in a lot of different ways, right? It's not like you're walking around with that cash just sitting in your bank account. And when you're forced to pay somebody 1. Whatever million dollars, $900,000, because you owe it and you got to pay now because
cash.
I need that money now, it's very different than just, you know, having a smaller debt or something to that effect.
Right.
Yeah. And people who ask to pay now, like, you know, I mean, some credit card companies do, but they accept payment plans. They accept, like, you know, I'll give you this now and some of the rest later. But there's only one organization that I think we're all aware of that's just like, nah, I want this money right the fuck now.
Yeah.
Oh, and Sally Mae, right?
Yeah, it's Sally Mae. Oh, it is Sally Mae. That was the correct answer.
Which is the mafia.
Yeah.
The Sally Mae mafia.
Oh,
and
God.
Like, you know, I think that like any other kind of gambling organization at some point would be like, sir, it is irresponsible for us to let you take out this amount of money.
Yeah,
or
but
put
not,
down this amount of money.
Not the mafia.
Not the mafia, no.
The mafia is like, yeah, yeah, you're paying it.
Yeah, you're going to pay it.
Yeah, or you're going to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the crazy part, man. Just when you hear the numbers and everything like that, this dude obviously had a problem.
Oh, yeah.
He had an addiction.
Yes.
And I think bringing it back to basketball, what does, you know, he likes to golf and everything like that, but what does he know the most? He knows basketball the most.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think he was gambling on the most? Like, ooh. That, you know, so, I mean, yeah, the casinos and golfing and all this stuff, but you think this man wasn't gambling on the thing he knew the most?
I don't know. I'm inclined to disagree with you there.
Okay.
I don't know if he was gambling on basketball the most. One, because we don't have as much evidence for it. And two, because if I'm a mobster, that's not a smart bet on my behalf.
True.
Especially if it's on Jordan himself, there's no way I'm winning. Like, he's not going to bet against himself. So, I just don't see that. I think that it was like for example, in 1993, the night before game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals, they couldn't find him. Like, he came back home, like, so late. Like, we're talking, like, 4 or 5 in the morning because he was in Atlantic City gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that that's his shit. Like, I don't think it's, like, necessarily on basketball. I think it's, like, golf or, like, tables and stuff like that. Like, that's his addiction.
True, and I agree with that. But I'm saying the perception of what do you think he's gambling on the most?
I think casinos.
To people within the NBA, you're going to have this dude who you see as this huge gambler.
Mm.
And you're not going to be able to convince people that he's not gambling on the sport.
Yes.
You're not going to be able to convince people that he's not gambling on what he knows the most. Or because it's the same thing with Pete Rose, where Pete Rose was gambling on baseball. And Pete Rose wasn't out there. Pete Rose was a 400 hitter. Like, Pete Rose wasn't out there missing balls and stuff like that. He was still winning. But you still can't gamble on your sport. So the perception of this dude who is racking up millions of dollars in debt and golf and in Atlantic City and all this stuff, the perception of that man, especially being the number one man in your sport,
is that he was doing it on his own sport.
He was doing it on his own sport, too. And that's why I say, from the basketball perspective.
And to kind of respond to that whole idea of, like, why didn't any of this stuff come out? You guys, like, just quoted that Michael Jordan on record said he paid $57,000 to a known drug dealer golf hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was on record. So it's not like this stuff would magically come out. I truly believe this stuff is out.
It's out
right
there
in front of our faces. We're just not in tune to caring about it.
Mm-hmm.
To where Michael Jordan openly talked about this is on the record of being investigated by the FBI, and no one batted an eye.
And Haynes is still like, yeah, man, we'll take it. the mustache yeah. and everything.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
No, I mean, because it's all about the money, man. Listen, it's all about the money. It's a lot easier for MLB to ban Pete Rose because he ain't making no money.
Anymore, at that point.
He wasn't making them any more money.
True.
It's a lot harder for the NBA to say, Mike, I'm sorry, man, you can't play no more. Or Haynes to say, man, I'm sorry, we got to drop you. Or Nike to say, yo, man, no more Jordans, because that literally will tank your business.
Yeah. yeah.
It would tank your business.
It's kind of pessimistic for us to say, but, like, I think the evidence is still, like, you know, you're relating it to, like, our times today earlier, Jaquez. Netflix, I think this weekend, was asked by a Times reporter, are you guys ruling out the chance of Louis C.K. coming back? And their publicist interrupted the question and said, Netflix can't answer that question right now. Their publicist, because their publicist was like, nigga, that's money. Yeah, I'm not going to answer this question and say yes or no either way. right, yeah. That's money. Someone's going to watch that special. And I think what we're arguing, Jaquez and I are arguing here, is that we think that this very sinister thing isn't driven by, like, this need for evil or anything. It's that we're talking about a man that was the engine to a billion-dollar enterprise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a very good point. I appreciate what you bring up earlier, too, that the MLB was done with Pete Rose, right?
Yeah.
But we mentioned, for anyone who doesn't know anything about Michael Jordan's history of retirement, as we had alluded to before the break, Michael Jordan retiring from basketball in no way meant that he was no longer a professional athlete, because he went to baseball, right?
He went to baseball. And how convenient for him, how convenient for this man not only to go to baseball, but to go to the team that the owner of his Chicago Bulls also owned. Mm-hmm. Like, for people who don't know this, Jerry Reinsdorf also owns the Chicago White Sox. And the Birmingham Barons was a double A affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. So here's the layout. All right, Jordan, listen, we got to clean this up. This is dangerously close to coming out. Your father just got murdered. You have a problem. I need you to go away. Yo, we still going to pay you. Jerry Reinsdorf is still going to pay you. The guy who writes your checks, he's still going to write your checks. Go do something else. Go play baseball. Stay in the public image. Because how big of a story was that? That was a huge story. That was a huge story. You got Michael Jordan, a man who hasn't swung a baseball bat in 20 years, getting more coverage on ESPN than Major League Baseball.
He hit 3 homers in 102 games.
Yes, that's true. That's not bad for somebody who hasn't played baseball in a while.
Yeah, he was great at everything, guys.
But here's the thing, too. And even going to the end of his baseball career, this notion that he was terrible is incorrect. Because
here it is,
This is not me standing. This is me saying that this notion that he wasn't good enough to play in minor league baseball, so he went to go do something where he was good enough and again, isn't complete, because he was getting better to the point where they were talking about promoting him to AAA baseball. Mm-hmm. So this notion that he just stunk up the joint and he couldn't take it anymore is incorrect. What really happened is, investigation over, you can come back to basketball. You know, 48 hours later, I'm back. And yep. Now this dude is, you know, in the middle of a conference race in basketball at the end of the season. I mean, it just all doesn't add up. And mm-hmm. It was all so convenient as well, which is crazy to me.
Guys, we're going to have to wrap up here pretty soon. I want to jump into a concept for you. We interviewed a guy named Brian Toohey a little while ago. Have you ever heard of The Fix Is In or thefixisin.net?
I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar with it.
Can I do the quick and dirty, man?
Yes, please, please.
All right. So, Brian Toohey, for anybody interested in sports-related conspiracies, he completely agrees with what the four of us are saying in terms of Michael Jordan's story. He takes it a step further because, you see, Brian Tuohy fundamentally believes with certitude, he believes that all professional sports are rigged. Okay. Full stop. So,
and that's part of the way you make money with a professional sport. Like, it's just the underbelly. It's the other side of the coin. It's just how it functions because most of the money ends up being made in the black market, at least this, according to Brian Tuohy.
Yeah, that's a real controversial concept. Plus, it's a huge broad brush. But I think one of the things that we and a lot of people listening would be interested in hearing is like, what's your opinion on that? Do you think that there's any sand to that argument, or is it? I mean, some sports naturally are going to be easier to fix than others, right? Mm-hmm. Like any one-on-one sport, like boxing, for instance. But could organized sports that have such large followings and such big groups of teams, you know, in comparison, like numbers of people on a team in comparison to boxing, could they be fixed?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's fun to talk about when your team loses or when the Patriots win and, you know, stuff like that.
Too soon.
I know. But, I mean, for me, I think there's levels to this, too. There's a difference between this is rigged and the team we want to win is going to win every single year. I just don't think, as somebody who's played sports and as somebody who's watched sports a lot.
Of course, on a professional level.
That's even making my point even stronger. On a professional level, a professional athlete ain't just going to want to lose. Mm-hmm. especially from a team sport perspective, I can't see you getting teams to just jump on board with the notion that, well, this is just, it is what it is. We got to take the L this year. On the flip side to that, I do think that there can be things that can sway certain games. A lot of it has to do with officiating. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, setting up teams, for instance, in the NBA, talking about David Stern again, when David Stern rejected trades for Chris Paul to go to the Lakers. Stuff like that can kind of sway certain aspects of the game that you're playing.
Or David Stern taking ownership of the New Orleans Pelicans because they were like in that financial emergency.
Yeah.
And then giving them the first pick.
Yes.
In which they get Anthony Davis.
Exactly. So there's stuff like that that can sway the narrative of the league. But to go as full stop and saying the players are also into this, I just can't buy that. I can't buy that fully.
I would say for anyone who is interested in that theory, and I'm with Jaquez on this, but if anyone is like, I want to kind of dive into that, I would Google, and I gave him the wrong name earlier. His correct name is Tim Donaghy. Google that man. He's an NBA ref who was arrested by the FBI for gambling. Google him and listen to some of the stuff that he talks about, and he kind of explains how it is possible for NBA refs to fix a game and make certain games close and more competitive. It's very, very fascinating and interesting stuff. But I would go down that realm for how the NBA could possibly be fixed. Also, look up the LeBron versus Kobe finals that never happened. That's another very interesting theory about how the NBA is possibly rigged.
Dude. All the NBA wanted that so bad.
All the commercials.
Yeah.
All those stupid puppet commercials.
They wanted that so bad.
Yeah, but then fucking Dwight Howard had to ruin it.
Yeah. Dwight Howard didn't get the memo, guys. Yeah.
That's honestly where I fall on a lot of this stuff, too. I don't want to conflate my opinion with the facts, but it's difficult for me to see wide-ranging corruption rigging in professional sports, you know, as we've been going over, like the incentive is not plausibly there, but
I'm going to agree to disagree with all you guys.
Oh yeah. All right. Let's keep it interesting, Matt. Yeah. This brings us to, unfortunately, something that is going to be probably a bummer for our listeners as well as for me here, which is that we are going to have to leave so much out of the story right now. We've spent some time diving deep into this story, and it sounds like Shaikis, Edgar, it sounds like you guys and I, and maybe you too, Matt, are on the same page about Michael Jordan's gambling conspiracy.
I think I'm at least very, very close to it, because it does feel like it's pretty obviously, just on the face of it, he messed up really hard. The only thing that I'm having a little hard time getting there with is that his father was like a hit, but that's just because I don't want to believe that. But it feels like it might be true.
Yeah. That's a very, that's going to turn people off.
It's a big ass.
Because it's a big ass, and it sucks to believe that. You don't want to believe that unless you're a monster. You don't want to believe that this man was murdered because of a hit. I mean, the murder in itself is devastating to know happened. But to believe that it was a calculated murder because of the actions of a man's son is very tough. It's a very tough pill to want to swallow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
earlier, I think off air, we had mentioned one stat that I had wanted to save until the end of the show. And
yes.
And Matt, you don't know this stat.
Okay. Either.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
It's a pretty basic one, but it's something that we haven't addressed until here at the very
His
end.
Batting average was .202.
You beat me to it. No, it's his net worth, you guys. Ladies and gentlemen, as of 2018.
It's okay. Do it.
As of 2018.
I know this, by the way.
Michael Jordan is worth
$1.7 billion. Hell yes.
That's insane.
There's not a situation wherein he lost, I guess, so much money that he was in the hole. I want to be very clear, none of the four of us are accusing Michael Jordan of doing anything other than being, you know, maybe off court, sometimes an unpleasant guy, and liking gambling.
I mean, I think we called him an asshole a couple times.
Oh, I definitely did. I would like to go on the record and say I am 100% accusing Michael Jordan of being the biggest dick in the NBA and the second biggest dick in America. Only to be followed by Donald Trump. Thank you very much.
That's on the record. That's on the
well,
record.
Well, that I is. Guess,
yeah, we'll just
I,
end.
I hope you get in trouble for that take.
If you guys, if they murder me, know that I had two rings in my pocket.
Oh, wow. Jesus. If they murdered Edgar, know that I had nothing to do with it.
I did not either. You know, man, what if podcasts ever blow up to the point where we get to be the target of like gambling investigations? I don't know.
That'd be a dream of mine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jakees wants that.
I would love that. I'm like, I didn't do it, guys. I'm just a lowly podcaster.
What a great problem to have. But there's also a problem that a lot of our listeners are running into at the end of today's episode.
Yeah, how do we find out more about Culture Kings and listen and learn?
Oh, guys, Culture Kings on the How Stuff Works Network. We release episodes currently every Wednesday and Friday. Subscribe to us, listen to us. It's a crazy show, man. We were pretty tame today compared to how crazy and how interesting a show can get. We get pretty wild, but it's a good time always.
You can also check out every episode that Culture Kings has ever done on their website, culturekingspod.com. One that I thought was particularly fascinating was the recent episode, Fake Outrage, Anybody Can Act.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes, that was a fun one. And we also, we're starting a new segment where we ask, so would you rather? As well, and we had a new one on that one, and these would you rathers are NSFW. NSFW, guys, not safe for work, but ooh damn, do they get you thinking.
And with that, we're going to have to leave billionaire Michael Jordan for another day. We brought up so many things that are worth your time if you want to learn more about this. Edgar, I think you mentioned Michael and Me, right? The book about the gambling addiction.
Yes.
Yeah. And we mentioned a few other things that are kind of, we got deeper than the tip of the iceberg, but there's more to the story. We hope you check it out, and we hope you write to Edgar, Jaikis, Matt, and myself with your opinions or your information. And hey, just going to throw it out there, folks, if you happen to have some smoking gun, solid evidence about something involving this case in any way, you can go ahead and send it to us.
We are conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
But wait, 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 wait.
Yeah, hold on.
Hold the horses. Put the badgers back in the bag before you write that email. Go check out our website because we have something huge going on. It's a first for us.
Yeah, we're going on tour in several cities. And all you have to do is go to stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com and then click on the live shows tab. You can see where we're going to be, when we're going to be there, and you can buy tickets directly from our site.
D.C., Atlanta, Philadelphia, Boston, New York.
That's it, I think.
Those are the main ones. This is our first time going on tour together. We have been on road trips together before, but usually just to investigate some creepy stuff, not to do a show for you. We're so excited to see you there. Invite your friends, invite your parents, invite, you know, like your coworkers that you think might be cool to hang out with after work, but you can't figure out what you guys would do.
Yeah, you can't figure out how they feel about, you know, chemtrails. Bring them on. Let's hang out. The best thing about it is we're going to get to hang out with you guys. Mm-hmm. So just come and be in the same room with us.
And write to us and let us know which city you're going to, and we might read some of your stories on the air.
So join us, stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com, and then click on the live shows tab. Do it now.